So we'll start. So it's Perek Yotes, Pasuk Dalid, and we have already done the mitzvah of Kedoshim to you. We saw the mitzvah of fearing, revering parents, and the mitzvah of Shabbos. Now we're moving on. Today we will cover two more mitzvahs, which go together as a unit. We'll see why I'm putting them together. They have one theme that runs through them. And let's see what they are. They seem a little bit abstract, these mitzvahs. Not as much, perhaps we don't relate to them as much as we do revering our parents and the keeping of Shabbos. Nevertheless, we'll see how beautiful the message that we can learn from them is. Okay, so Pasuk Dalet. So it's page one here. Yeah, Rona, that's right, the first way, beautiful. Al Tifnu El Ha'alilim. So that's how it starts. Do not turn to the idols. Ve'elekei masecha lo yisasu lachem. And molten gods, which means like formed gods, you shall not make for yourselves. Ani Hashem elekeichem, I am Hashem, your God. Just want to see one more pasuk. Yes. No, I think that's all for this one. We'll just do this, first do this mitzvah, and then we'll go on to the next one that we'll see Rashi. So this mitzvah, as you can see, obviously is the mitzvah of idol worship, which this is not the first time in the Torah that it mentions it, but obviously we are learning something from it, and it's in the context of Kedoshim. And let's see what our pasuk is telling us about idol worship specifically. So Rashi says, first of all, Al Tifnu El Ha'alilim, do not turn to the idols. The first time we have the prohibition about not worshiping idols is in the Aseres Hadibros, in the Ten Commandments, right? That's what we say. That's why all the Ten Commandments can be found in this parsha. And here it says it in this form. So Rashi says, what does it mean, do not turn to the idols? It's actually a very interesting language. He says, la'avdam, he establishes immediately, to worship them. Okay, so that's what Rashi says. In other words, turning can mean many things. Here Rashi says turning means to actually worship them. We'll see that turning can mean something else also. So we'll see soon. Why do we call idols elilim in Hebrew? What does the word elilim mean? So let's see, Rashi says something interesting, very interesting. Sometimes we think that elilim comes from the word kale, like God, right? And that's why we call them elilim, like they're gods, they're other gods. But Rashi says, no, don't read it that way. Rather, what do we read it? Elilim is lashon al. The word elilim is al, not. Why? It's a negation word. We're negating. We're saying not. Kiloi hu chashuv. An idol is considered as a non-entity. It is not. It doesn't really exist. It's something, it's a facade. It's something that we imagine that it's there, that it has power, but it really doesn't. That's what an idol means. So it's a very powerful thing that in the word itself, you understand what the concept is about the worshiping of the idols. Okay, so it's not kale, rather al, not. Okay, that's a very important thing. We'll see a little bit more soon. Let's see now in the next Rashi. What is Elekei Masecha? Because it seems double. So first it tells you not to turn to the idols, and then it says, and the molten gods you shall not make. So he says, Tchilasan Elilim Heim. At first they are non-entities. But then what happens? V'im atepoina achareyim. But if you turn to follow them, Saifcha la saisan elekus. Your end shall be to make them gods. So they really don't mean anything, and they have no power, and they can't even affect your life in any way. And really, really, when we think about it for a moment, we realize that they're empty and they're powerless. And yet, we see that in life sometimes. When we give power to something else, all of a sudden, it does take on its own power. That can happen with another person. That can happen with an experience. That can happen with many, many things in life. So here he says, as Rashi tells us, that's why it has also the name Elokei. Because you see, the word Elokei is a god. We just said it's not a god. But because you're making it into a god, it takes on a little bit of a god to you, unfortunately. And you can start to imagine that it does have certain power over you. And then Rashi tells us something, a very important lesson. What does it mean, lo yisasu lachem, you shall not make? Because it's telling us about what we're supposed to do or not do. So we know we can't go buy an idol. Okay, we don't buy an idol. But here, and I know it sounds so remote because most people today don't worship idols in that sense. However, if you've traveled to India and to, you know, to certain countries in the Far East, there is still idol worship, even in Japan and all these places. But let's see over here what he says about not making. So he says, "Lo sasu l'acherim," this is in Rashi, "do not make them for others, v'loy acherim lachem, nor should others make them for you." Because you might think that as long as you don't make them, as long as you just buy them, it's okay. Ah, no, no, no. You can't buy them. You can't make them for others. The other people can't make them for you. It doesn't work that way. The im timer, and if you will say, lo sasu la'atzmechem, do not, that means do not make it for yourselves. Aval acherim ma'isin lachem, but you might think, oh, other people can make it for you. Harei kfar nemar, we've already learned, lo yihye lecha, that was in the Ten Commandments, that you should not have, right? It should not be to you. In other words, you shouldn't own. So other people can't make it for you. So definitely, obviously, you can't make it for yourself, but you also can't make it for another. Another can't make it for you. There's no permissible way to own an idol, which means, as he says, which implies that you may have loishalcha, neither yours, and not others. Okay, it's very strict halacha because idols, as we know in the Torah, is one of the worst prohibitions. Because we take another god, whatever that means. Obviously, we have a different way of relating it to it today, but still, it's one of the harshest, and that's why it's very exact as far as all of the different prohibitions that are involved. Okay, let's go a little bit more. We're going to see a little bit more in the commentaries about the exact wording, but what I'd like to do is to do the next mitzvah, because the commentaries will tie both of these mitzvahs together. So the next mitzvah will be the few psukim, it's pasuk hey, that's on page 2, so I'll scroll down. Sorry that I didn't scroll down before. Okay, so here we have, see if I can move this. Yeah, okay. V'chi sizbechu. So it says, when you slaughter, zevach shlamim, a sacrifice of a peace offering. Remember when we learned about the karbanos, the sacrifices, the shlamim, that was the sacrifice that a person brought because they wanted to. They wanted to donate something to Hashem, and that's usually not brought for a sin. In other words, it's not a atonement offering. It is more a donation or a want offering that you want to come close to Hashem. And also the shlamim, what's unique about it is that it is eaten by the kohen and the owner, as well as the mizbeach. So it's shared by God, the person who's bringing it, and the kohen. So it makes sort of speak peace between all those bringing it. And it's shalem, it brings completion. So it's a very beautiful carbon. So here he says, if when you slaughter a shlamim, l'Hashem, for God, so he says, l'rtsoinchem tizbachuhu, you shall slaughter it to appease for you. It's an interesting language. What it means is, l'rtsoinchem means that you are going to become wanted by Hashem. Do it so that you are wanted. Do it so that you find favor in the eyes of Hashem. To create that goodwill. That's what it means. Okay, and let's see what's the halacha here. Let's see. So the next pasuk tells us, "Biyoyim zivchachem," on the day that you slaughter it, "Ye'achel," you shall eat it, "Umi macharas," and on the morrow, so the day that you slaughter and the next day. And what happens, "Va'noisar," if some is left over, "Ad yoyim hashlishit," for the third day, "Ba'esh yisareif," it shall be burned in fire. There are specific halachas as far as how long you are permitted to eat a carbon in. It's very interesting. It says that generally with a carbon shlamim, there's two different kinds. So there's one kind that you can eat it for the day, the night in between, and the next day. And then there's another kind that you can eat it just for the day and the night. But mainly it's 2 days and the night in between. Anything that's left over after that has to be burned, cannot be eaten. But we're going to see that really our psukim is not talking so much about the leftover meat and eating it then. That's not the mitzvah here. But I just want to share one thing before we go further and ascertain what really we are talking about. So I saw a very beautiful thing that explained that why is it that the Torah gives us such a limited amount of time to eat a karban in? It's a very beautiful thing, and not leave it over. Why shouldn't we? You know, I laugh. In my house, my mother used to make chicken on Thursday night, and my father would eat it till the next Tuesday. It was wonderful. She had to make supper, you know, once a week, Wednesday. Then she would start again to make Shabbos. It's fantastic. What could be better than leftovers? Why can't you eat it extended period of time? So actually, I saw such a beautiful explanation. It says like this. This is part of the beauty, in a sense, of the peace that is put into this offering. That what? That if we know that we are not going to be allowed to eat it after a certain amount of time, so we're not going to make, so we're going to make sure not to have too many leftovers, but it's a big animal, so what are we going to do? We're going to make sure to invite more people and to share the meat. So we're not going to keep it just for ourselves because we know we can't eat it. If we know we can have leftovers, we might be a little bit stingy, so to speak, and apportion it. I'll have more on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so won't be so quick to share. This way, it is much more, in a sense, incentivizes us to share and to include others. So it's actually a very beautiful idea, which has nothing really to do with the carbon itself. But again, showing the communal, if you want a sense, the sense of community that Torah wants to make sure that we have, as well as that whenever, even when we are thinking of our spiritual growth, because that's what a carbon is. A carbon is getting close to Hashem. Hashem says, you want to get close to me? The way to get close to me is by being kind to other people. So it's actually a magnificent thing. So in the spiritual growth, Hashem puts immediately, right away, into place a way that we are definitely going to come close to other people. So it's actually very beautiful. But let's see now, what's the mitzvah talking about? Let's see, in the next pasuk it'll tell us. We're going to get more of a clue. Ve'im he'ochel ye'ochel b'yeim ha'shlishi. But if it will be eaten on the third day, so as we said, it's not allowed to be eaten on the third day, what happens then? Pigulhu. And this is actually the name of the mitzvah. It's not such a common mitzvah. It's called pigul. We don't know it because we don't have sacrifices. Pigul, in English, they translate it, it is rejected. It is something which Hashem finds quite disgusting. And we'll see what he means here because it's not clear yet. But he says, and what is it? Lo yeiratze. It shall not be considered pleasing. Because remember we said, when we bring the carbon originally, the point is that we should be pleasing in the eyes of Hashem. We should come close. We should create a bond. Here we're saying, if you eat it after the time, well, then it's not pleasing anymore. You've destroyed it. And what will happen? And here we'll see the severe punishment. The oichlov and the ones, whoever eats it, avayna yisa, will bear his sin. Ki es kodesh Hashem chilel. It's very strong language. For he, what is sacred to Hashem, he has desecrated. V'nichrasa hanefesh hahi me'ameha. And that soul shall be cut off from his people, meaning the punishment is kares. As we mentioned before, that's the most severe punishment that could be given, the punishment of kares, cutting off the soul from God. What is the mitzvah here? So this is interesting. I just want to clarify, even though we'll see it inside, just to make sure. Because it sounds like the mitzvah is what we refer to as noisar, the leftover, that you're not allowed to eat it after the time. But no. This mitzvah of pigul is a very interesting one. The mitzvah of pigul is that when you bring a korban, so you come to the Beis HaMikdash, you have the animal, and you are whoever it is that's going to shecht it. So it's both the person bringing the animal and the kohen who is doing the actual slaughtering of the animal. While they are doing that, they have to have pure thoughts. What do I mean by pure thoughts? It means that if you bring the animal and you have in mind that today is Monday and I'd like to eat the animal on Wednesday night or Thursday, that means after the time. All you're doing is thinking about it. That is pigul. That's total, how do you say it? That's what Hashem says. That's what causes no goodwill and you get kares, you get cut off. This is the mitzvah of pigul, which means a thought in your mind, an intention in your mind, which is not according to what is supposed to happen with this karban, both in the kohen and in the owner. So if you have in mind to do something which is against the halacha of the karban while you are slaughtering that karban, let's just say that afterwards you don't do that. So you decide, you think that I'm going to eat it on Thursday, but then after you slaughter it, you eat it all on the next day, right, the right amount of time, you're still... transgressed. Once you thought that, once you had that negative intention in your mind, it already disqualifies this carbon. It's quite a powerful mitzvah. This is very unique because, as we say usually in Yiddishkeit, our thoughts don't disqualify things. As we always say, the main thing is the action. Do what's right. Yeah, we always say what's right. If you don't want to, do it anyway. But here we say, no. If you think something negative with the wrong intention as you are doing it, it disqualifies the entire act. This is, we'll see soon, this is why I grouped it together, not I, the Mefarshim group it together. This is why the Torah groups together these two mitzvahs, idol worship and the mitzvah of Pigel. Because these are the two, I know, it's a very unusual one, Ron, it is. It's quite unusual. Pigel is not usual, but this is it. It's the intention that's wrong as you are slaughtering and sacrificing the animal. It's an interesting, it's part of the karbanos. That's why also we don't know that much because we don't do karbanos, so we don't know so much about it. But what it shows us is that there is a power in thought that we sometimes, as Jews, we don't put so much emphasis on that, but we have to realize that the thoughts are extremely powerful. And both of these mitzvahs have that in common, because idol worship is in our thoughts, right? It's if we ascribe power to something else besides God. That's the way, the attitude that we have, how we look at something, our perception, how we feel, how we think about something. And the same thing comes with this mitzvah of Pigel. Okay, just to quickly see inside the Rashi's, if you have any questions, I don't know, I feel bad. If I could see you, you could raise your hands. I know there's comments, but I'm not very good at looking at the comments while I'm doing it, but I hope it's clear. So, Chana, you have a question? Or... I don't know if she has. I can't hear. I'll have to. One second. Let me see something. Maybe. I wonder if I unmute. Let's see if I can do that while this is mute. Let me see something. No, I can't do it. Is it okay if we wait? Or because I can't unmute them unless I stop the share. Let me see. Let's see. Okay, I think you can unmute yourself if you want to. I think so. I think that's what I've done. Yeah. Ah.
Yeah, we just needed the next page. We couldn't see.
Oh, good. Thank you. Okay, so I'll scroll down for sure. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm not concentrating on that. Okay, beautiful. We'll do that now. Okay, but the truth is we're going to go back to this page and I'll scroll down because we're going to do the Rashi. Okay, so let's see here. So this page says like this, when you slaughter. Ah. Okay, so he says, Loi, and you know what, I'll just make this small, and I won't be able to see you because it's hard to, okay, here we go, okay. So Loi, now try to remember to scroll. Loi nemra parsha zu ela lilamed. This portion was said only to teach us, shalai tehez vichasan ela al menas le'achel, that the slaughter should be only with the intent, as we mentioned, the intent, that they should be eaten, b'tzoich hazman hazeh, within this time. For if the verse only means to fix a time period of eating, that's already been taught in a previous pasuk where it says, so it tells us about the time period in other pasukim. Here we are establishing that you have to have the right intention in mind when you actually bring the karban. Then he says, so the at the beginning, at the outset, tchilas zvichasoi tehei al menas nachas ruach, as a very beautiful language. At the beginning, when you are actually slaughtering the animal, it should be with the intent of contentment. In other words, to bring nachas to Hashem, to bring contentment. Sheyehei lachem l'rotzein, so that it should be an appeasement before God on your behalf. She'im tachshivu alav machshavas psul, for if you shall think a thought of invalidation, in other words, that you're going to eat it at the wrong time, when you're already bringing it, you already have in mind to do something wrong with it, lo yiratz aleichem, it will not be an appeasement before me. That's what Hashem says. Okay. Just want to see if there's anything else here important. Here Rashi brings an interesting word in French that's like appeasement, but it's not French. Okay, so let's see. Okay, again, as he stresses in Pasuk Vav, that it shall be eaten on the day of your slaughter, which means when you slaughter it, you shall slaughter it with intent for eating it within this period that I have already fixed for you. Okay. Now, just one, now we go down to the next page and let's see. Okay, I think that's all that I want to do from the Rashis. Oh, I just want to see Pigel. The word in Rashi for Pigel, which is on page 3, as everyone, let's see. It is page 3. It has that word Pigel in it, in Rashi, in the middle. It says, so Rashi translates, Rashi says the word Pigel is rejected. Or, as we said, mitayav, repulsive. Like pigulim in the gravy of that which is repulsive. So it is actually repulsive to Hashem, the fact that while you are doing the mitzvah, you already have intention to do something wrong. This is on page number 3. Okay, let's go now. That might be all that I want to see. Yeah, he says an interesting thing that it's quite strict. This pigul is chayiv kares. You become, if you transgress, then you can, this is the punishment is kares, as we said, kares is the total cutting off, and this is one of the most severe punishments, and it's a worse punishment than actually eating at the wrong time if you didn't intend bad. So if, let's say you intended, you had no negative intentions when you brought the carbon, but ended up that there were leftovers and you did eat it, that doesn't get kares. But this, if you had intention while you were bringing it to do something wrong, that does deserve kares. So it's a very severe prohibition. Okay, that was number 3. Now we're going to see some of the commentaries. So we're on page 4. There's a little 4 on the next page of your booklet. And I'm going to scroll down so everybody can see. We'll do some of the mefarshim inside. So let's see the Kliyakar, because there's some very beautiful ideas that I want to get to. So the Kliyakar says, Al tifnu el ha'alilim, do not, so to speak, turn towards these idols. So he says, why does this follow the mitzvah that we had previously about the honoring of the parents, the revering of the father and the mother? So he says, it's very exact. It works. It flows. How does it flow? Achar shehizir al-mayra shloisha maylidav, after Hashem has warned us about the fear of the three who have given birth to you, as we said, the father, the mother, and God, so it comes to lessen, so to speak, limit, and tell us not to turn to idols, because what do people say? Some people have this view about idols, and Yirmiyahu says it very clearly, Oimrim la eit aviata, they say to a tree, you are my father, ula even ati iladitani, and to a stone, you have given birth to me. What does that mean? Who thinks a tree has given birth to them? But what it means is that if you ascribe any power to them, it means you actually think that they have some control over your life, like your parents have control over your life. Your parents have given you all your genes and all your opportunities, so to speak, and you think, it's all of these external things that are also what are controlling my life. That's a very distorted way of thinking, but unfortunately, we can fall into that trap. Some people will think, I didn't have the opportunity to have this education, therefore I'm limited. Now, it might be true that it's harder for you, but nothing has power over us. We always have free choice, right? If we were in the wrong environment and set the wrong example, that environment cannot become our idol, so to speak, that we say that controls us. Nothing controls us. We control ourselves. So here he says a very important thing. He says like this, Lefishan, so he says like this to tell us, She'ein shutfim b'yitzir asecha, there are no partners in your formation, ki im shloisha elu, only these three, v'lo yaser and not more. And then he says, and then what goes on to the next mitzvah, v'samach lazeh, v'chi sizbechu zevach shlomim, as we said, that if you slaughter this carbon shlomim, what's the connection? Because it says, do not turn to the idols. What does turn mean? Pinia. What does pinia mean? Hibalev. That's in the heart. That means that we are, when we say we turn to something, it means we are giving it importance. We are looking at it so that it means that it has some, not only validity, but it has some power. That's, and where is that? Where are we ascribing that from? It's from our perception, from our mind. As he says, that's in our heart. K'maisha ne'mar v'im yifne levavchai, brings verses, psukim, that prove this, that if you will turn with your heart, asher levavai paine, that his heart turns. Why? Ki ba'avai dezara, because when it comes to idol worship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzaref machshava lemaiseh. There, Hashem actually joins a thought to an action, which means that even if you just think about Avodah Zarah, it's already as if you've done it. Because that's what Avodah Zarah is. Avodah Zarah is giving power to another god. So it's, you don't actually have to bow physically, just in your mind. So this is something that we can relate to nowadays. Unfortunately, many people worship money, financial security, right, as we know, and they think that's going to be the beginning and middle and end, whatever it may be. But as soon as you think that way, as soon as that's your perception, that's already committing the idol worship. That's what it is. You don't even have to do any action, just thinking about it. And that's why all these mitzvahs, one flows from the other. And then he says, Shenemar Laman, Tfoish Espinei Yisrael Belibasam. Right, Hashem says that in Yechezkel, when he's talking about the Jewish people and they are literally running after their idol, so he says, in order to seize the house of Israel, why? Because they are worshipping idols. Why? Because they are thinking, they are turning to idols. So as soon as you turn to idols, Hashem is already ready, so to speak, to hold you responsible. And then he says, "V'tamei shel davar ki ikar avodah zarah tluya b'lev hamaimin," because the main thing of avodah zarah is what's in the heart of the one who believes. We don't find it in any other mitzvah that the thought actually disqualifies. In other words, if I decide today that this Shabbos, I'm not going to light candles. I'm not going to light candles this Friday night. That doesn't matter until I don't light them, right? It doesn't matter what I think today about my lighting of candles or whatever other mitzvah where I don't want, I'm going to go and eat, I don't know, whatever. You know, the hamburger. That's not important what I think until I actually do it. But with the mitzvah of idol worship, as soon as I think about it, that is already transgressing. That's a very unique thing because it has to do with the belief. It's the attitude, it's the perception. Right, as we say in the whole Torah, you don't find it. Only with idol worship. And in the carbon, as we said, with the sacrifice. Because if you think at the time of slaughtering, that you're going to eat it at the wrong time, after the time, or in the wrong place, then it becomes pigul, as we said, rejected, an abomination to Hashem. Hashem doesn't want it, and lo yirata, it is not wanted. And that's why they put these mitzvahs next to each other. Okay, that's what the Kli Yakar says. We're going to go up on the same page. So on the same page, number two, Rani, you see it's that page four, but it's number two on the page on the top, the Arachayim HaKadosh. The Arachayim says that the word is al tifnu. Why do we use that word, do not turn? It's like perspective, because Imre Lashon Piniya. Why? La'asar machshava avodah zarah, that it's actually to forbid us from thinking about the avodah zarah. Shelo yeh poine b'daitai lachshav ba. That's what it means. That we shouldn't turn to face it, which means that our thoughts shouldn't be allowed to travel there. We have to make sure that if our thoughts are going in that direction, we turn it away. As he says, "Ulaskilcha al davar emes," and to make us understand a very true matter, da, ki b'chinas aleikim acherim, when we use the language of other gods, sometimes we say, do not worship other gods. Why do we use that language, aleikim acherim? Because it means, he says, tisyaches la b'chinas acharayim. How should we look at those other gods as others? Acharayim meaning your back, which means that they don't matter, they don't have any worth, it's like something in the back of your mind. What's in the back of your mind? What you're not worrying about. When something's at the front of your mind, it means something that you give importance to. That's why we call them other gods. They should be other. They should be just in the back that you know they exist, but we don't give them any importance, any validity. And he says, Kusha Adam Chayshev, but when a person thinks about it, what happens, and a person contemplates and starts to give it a little bit of maybe it does matter, maybe there is some validity, maybe they do have some power, Hein Painim Aysam Litzad Pnim. Then what you're doing is you're actually internalizing them. So you're taking them from their position in the back and you're making them in a position in the front and internal. And that's a disaster. That's already the beginning of the end. The Hamaskil Yavin, and the person who is intelligent will understand. Let's go to the next page. So page 5, I think there's a little 5 on the top. And we'll see that quickly a few other beautiful ideas from the Evan Ezra and the Sfarnu. So he says like this, what is Elilim? So a number, it says there's a little number 3 near it. Do you see in the middle of the page? A little number 3?
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful. So he says Elilim. Elilim are psilim. They are these idols, so to speak. And then he says, V'yitachin, you see I bracketed, heyaysay migzeres al, as we said in Rashi, that they are come from the word al, which is negative, not. Why? She'einenu yesh, because really they don't exist. They really are nothing. They have no strength to them. They have no weight. They don't matter. They're not a true existence. And that's how we have to view them. And then we call them Elekei Masecha. What does that come from? Lekabel Koyach El Yoinim, Ki Ein Tzorech Leleka Acher Imi. He says, do not ascribe any power because we don't need another God. Hashem says, you don't need somebody else with me. Al Kein Kosov Ani Hashem Elekeichem. That's why the Pasuk says, you have to only serve me because I am Hashem, your God. I don't need another partner. And why does it say it Belashon Rabim, in plural, tifnu and tasu, that you shall not turn and you shall not make. And it says it in plural. It's a very important lesson. He says, ki haraya, somebody who sees, the loyigala hadavar, he sees somebody else who is worshipping or who is doing the wrong thing and making idols, and he doesn't reveal it, hu mishtatef imay, it's considered as if he becomes complicit, he becomes a partner. So in other words, we are all in this together. If you notice somebody else turning and doing the wrong thing in this matters, you have to pay it attention and you have to deal with it. You have to obviously try and help the person, show them the right way. That's why it's in plural. We're all responsible for each other and we have to look and notice, and we cannot turn away if we see somebody else serving idols. Number 4 is the Sfarnu. So the Sfarnu says, it's on the same page, the Chiz Sizbechu, so it's on the other columns, you see on, it's more to the bottom. So he says, what does it mean that you are sacrificing? Sheka'asher amar anoichi Hashem alikecha. In the Ten Commandments, it says, I am Hashem, your God. Sheikablu alaika oisei oisei levada, that you should accept Hashem himself as a God. K'moi shekiblu b'yitzias Mitzrayim, like you've accepted when Hashem took us out of Egypt. And what did we say then, especially when we were going through the Yam Suf, when Hashem split the sea, we said, Ze Keli Vanveyu, right? This is our God, and I will beautify him, Elekei Avi Varemimenu, the God of my father, and I will exalt him. In other words, we identified him as our God. You see, Keli, Elekei, that's how it should be, our God. Loibel Vad Amar Sheyishmeru Mitzvaysav. It's not enough that we should just keep his mitzvahs, and we should exalt him. Like you know, you say when you greet a king or when you accept a king, and that you davened him levadai, only to him, when we are in a time of pain. That's not enough. Here we're adding more. Aval hizir imze, but it is warning us and it is giving us an extra thing to be careful. Sheyachasu al kvoidai ma'id, that you have to be very extra careful with the honor of Hashem. So it's not just that you would say he's the only God and you daven to him, but you treat him with the utmost honor, the utmost glory, the utmost respect. In a way, as we say, ba'ayfen shelo yichalalu es kotshav afilu b'machshava, that you shouldn't desecrate his holiness even in your thoughts. This is a very powerful thing again, the thoughts. Even in your thoughts. Sometimes, and this is not a judgment, but sometimes in life we go through challenges and we can start to have certain doubts, but a person has to be careful. So we're people, so we do think like that, but we shouldn't allow ourselves to think about it too much. So we shouldn't allow our minds to go there and to say, I don't know if God is really, whatever, if he, why is he doing this and what's he doing? And if I was God, I would run the world differently. These are thoughts, but in the thoughts you are already disrespecting God. And in this mitzvah, we have to be careful in our attitude, in our thoughts. Very powerful thing. Just a few more beautiful ideas. So let's just see the Orach Chaim. This is the last one of these commentaries. It's because the Orach Chaim gives us another very beautiful thing. So that's on the next page. It's page 6. In the booklet, it's page 6. And it's in here. It's number 5. It says, Elilim, And again, this says the Arachayim HaKadosh says that we are mentioning Elilim in the plural. That's the word Elilim, like other gods, but it's in the plural. Amar Loshen Rabin. Letzad, letzad, why does it use the plural language when it talks about idols? Letzad she bechinas harahi bechinas apirud. When we're talking about this level of negativity, it is multiplicity. We know that negativity is a place where things don't get along. When things are not united, when things don't get along, that's where the negativity is. That's already, we know. It's not possible that they can be united. That's why always, when we mention idols, we mention them in the plural. It's like anything negative, you know, it's funny, it's like they can't even get themselves along, so to speak. It's not they can't even make a united front themselves. There's always this sense of disunity. But what it means is it actually within us creates a very big sense of a sense of where we don't feel, where we feel fragmented, we feel all over the place. We're not able to focus on one God, on one mission, on why we're here. That's what idol worship does. And that's why it's always in the plural. And then he says a very beautiful, this is the last one, this also explains idols in a very beautiful way. The Aruch Hayim HaKadosh says, why is it called Elekei Masecha, which we translated as molten gods? But he says, really the word Masecha is also means something else. Masecha means a blockage. What do these gods do? They create a blockage between us and Hashem. And that's a very terrible feeling. That's the feeling when a person feels alone. When you feel alone, that's where this comes from. When you don't feel that Hashem is with you. Because when a person feels that Hashem is with them, they're never alone. But when we feel alone, this comes from this idol worship. And he says a very beautiful thing, because what happens is that when a person does a good deed, Hashem rests his Shechina. You know, you do a mitzvah, so you feel God with you. And it does, it gives you a certain up, a lift. Because why do we feel that lift? Because Hashem's Shechina, actually Hashem's presence rests upon you. But unfortunately, when we do something wrong, then there's a void. Then Hashem has to leave almost, because you're going against his will. So he's not there. And when there's a void, what do we feel? We feel this emptiness, and that's a blockage between us and Hashem. And that's what idol worship really is. So he says like this, somebody who serves idols creates this curtain and this blockage between him and his creator. And that's why he tells us afterwards, I am Hashem your God, to tell us that we should try not to separate from God, obviously. How? By constantly making ourselves a vehicle for Hashem's presence. Okay, these are the commentaries here on the Psukim. Oh, there was one more Aruch Hayim. One more. Sorry, on page 7, but I'll just show you one more nice one that he explains also about the idol worship. He says, this is a very nice one also. Very beautiful. This is like an allusion. It's not direct, but he says an interesting allusion. When the Pasuk says, Elekei Masecha, what does it mean? So he says like this. He brings a story that there's actually, it's a quote from it's a pasuk in Melachim. And if you look up in the Navi Melachim, you'll see the story. The story is with the prophet Elisha, that Elisha was called by the king of Israel, who wasn't a very good, he was a wicked king. And there was a war that they were fighting. So it was the king of Israel together with the king of Yehuda. In those days, the kingdom was split. The king of Yehuda, Yehoshaphat, was a tzaddik, but the other king wasn't. So what happened was that... I think I lost everybody. Oh, no. Maybe. Sorry. I don't know what happened. It doesn't matter. Oh, God. Everybody's gone. I don't know why. I'm not sure. It says connecting. I think we've lost, what's the word? Oh, everybody's here. Hi, is everybody back? I hope so. Okay. Oh, are you back? Can you hear me? Okay. Unmute for some reason. Can everybody hear me? I don't know if they can hear me.
Yeah, I can
see you.
You can see me?
I can see Hannah. Who is speaking? Lisa.
Can you hear me now?
I can see you. Where are you?
I know.
I'm here.
No, we can't see you. You can't see you. We are not.
Yeah, I know. I don't put my. I
don't put my picture up there.
Oh, yeah, I don't think they could hear us. Can you see me or hear me? No?
I know.
Okay, no, I guess not.
I don't know what's happening.
Something went wrong here, okay.
What can we do?
I don't know what to do now.
You think she's a wheelies?
I know, but I don't know why it's not coming.
You might have to take over.
You can hear them, but they can't hear us. I don't know why.
Think she realized.
Can you hear me at all?
No, yeah. I see you.
Oh, good. You can't see me, but you can hear me. Good. Because, no, it got disconnected for a second. So I'm... Yes.
No, it was more than a second. It was a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I can hear you, and you couldn't hear me. I don't know why. Okay, let me see now. I'm just going to share the screen again, and we'll hopefully... Well, it won't get disconnected again. Okay. Anyways, hi. Okay. So here. So it says like this, that the Navi at the time was Elisha. And they wanted to win the war and they didn't know how. So anyways, they called the prophet Elisha to come. And he said something interesting. He said, I'll come, but only on account of the king that's righteous. But the king that is not righteous, I don't even want to see his face. That's what he said. Why? And this is a very interesting thing, because a very strong pasuk, he says, because somebody who is not righteous, I don't even want to look at them. And here the Ora Chaim says a very magnificent thing. He says that that's what the pasuk is alluding to, that we shouldn't make ourselves not righteous, because if we do that, other people are not permitted to look at us or won't want to look at us. So don't make yourself an Elokei Masecha, a molten God, which means something which is causing other people not to look at you. Let's see. As he says, Masecha from the word Lehistakel, to look. Don't make yourself in a way that other people should not be permitted to look at you. Why would other people not be permitted to look at you? If you behave in a not a good way, not a proper way. So make sure that you behave the proper way, that you keep up the right image, so that other people are allowed to look at you. That's what he says. That's why it's double. So it's not only idols, but even yourself. Don't make yourself an idol, which means something which other people shouldn't be looking at. Okay, that's what the Ora Chaim says. Just a very, like I say, a remez. Okay. I'll just say the Al Sheikh orally. So the Al Sheikh tells us, I'll tell you, it's on page number 8. But the Al Sheikh says like this. He tells us two very nice things. So first of all, he says that we shouldn't turn towards them. What does that mean, we shouldn't turn towards them? Because, and it follows from what we were learning before. Before we learned about honoring our parents, revering our parents. So we might think, that, and we know, why do we have to revere our parents? Remember we mentioned, because they're the ones who brought us into the world. So if they brought us into the world and they gave us and they supplied us with many of the things that we have, but the truth is that who really brought us into the world? We know that it really all is from Hashem. Nevertheless, we are told to be grateful to our parents, because Hashem used our parents as, if you want to say, a tool or whatever it may be, to bring us into the world. So a person might think, if that's the case, I should also give honor to all of the other tools that Hashem uses, the sun, the moon, the stars. So right away the pasuk says, no. The parents Hashem has given a certain, for some reason he decided that we have to honor them, so we have to honor them. But all the other objects that he uses, which supplies us with our needs, Hashem specifically says, do not give them any honor. They don't belong in that hierarchy. Only your parents, not other things. That's why it flows right over from there. And then he also tells another very beautiful thing. He says that a person shouldn't think, and a person's spirit shouldn't fall, and think that if you, God forbid, turn away from Hashem and do serve idols once, you would think that Hashem is going to turn away from you. So in truth, on a certain level, that's true. But it's not true in the depth of it. In other words, Hashem always remains connected to us, no matter what we do. Hashem is always our God. As he says, Rak she'im asisem, im asoischem elekei masecha, even though you do other gods, ani Hashem elekeichem, I am still Hashem, your God. Why? Ki, because he says, I will rule upon you with anger, But I might punish you, but I'm still your God. I still remain connected. A Jew can never be disconnected. That's why it stresses Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And then it says also very beautifully that the Al-Sheikh explains, why does he use the example of a carbon that you have in the wrong intention while you're bringing it? Which carbon does he use? He uses the carbon shlamim, and he doesn't bring other carbonists as the example. Because he says a very beautiful thing. He says that when a person will honor their parents, when a person will keep Shabbos properly, and especially when a person will make themselves holy, as the parsha began, what will that do? It will elevate a person that they won't be doing sins. And if they're not doing sins, they don't have to bring other karbanis. The only kind of carbon that they'll have to bring or they'll want to bring is a carbon shlamim, a carbon of donation to Hashem, of coming close to Hashem, not because they sinned, but because they want to come closer. So that's why it flows that we bring this example of this carbon. Okay, now just very quickly to start our next theme, which we have 15 minutes, good, because this is a very important theme. We have over here, this is the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch tells us something very beautiful. And he says, why, what's the background, so to speak, what's the theme, what's the understanding, the root, as he uses the word, of the mitzvah of Pigel? So as we stressed, we kept on stressing, because we're going to lead on to, is the idea of thought, the power of thought. Even though the Sefer HaChinuch has a very interesting philosophy, he always says that our actions is what follows, is what creates, in a sense, first, he says, acharei ha-maise nimshach al-vavais. A person should do, even if they don't feel, and once a person does, then they'll start to feel the right thing. So our thoughts come, in a sense, can be pulled based on our action. However, so we might think that our thoughts are not so important. As long as we're doing the right thing, what's the difference what we think? So here the Sefer HaChinuch says, that's all true, but our thoughts are extremely important. And a person has to realize that thoughts really is what molds and makes us, right? Because as a human being, what is it that gives us our uniqueness? It's our perspective, how we look at things. And once we have the right perspective, hopefully our speech will follow and our actions will also follow. So really it goes both ways. And that's why he says, this is the whole idea of a carbon. Do you remember when we mentioned, what is the root, what's the concept of a carbon? So when he explained carbonis, he said, lahachshir machshavos, to purify and to better and to improve our thought process. Why? How will it improve our thought process? Because when we're bringing the animal as a sacrifice, we are supposed to use our minds, use our imagination, use our thought process, and picture it as if not the animal is on the Mizbeach, but who is on the Mizbeach? We. So we are like that animal. It's not the animal that's being burned. It's us that should be burned because we've done something wrong. And therefore, it is actually the power of the mind that we are investing when we are bringing a carbon. And he says, that's why he says, that the person has to litzayer binafsham, to imagine in his mind, mitoicha pa'ula, in the action that he is doing. While he is doing the action, the main thing is that he should be thinking. And what should he be thinking? He should be understanding the value and the difference between what is roya hacheit, what is the negative, v'tuv darkei hayosher, and what is the positive. In other words, to differentiate between the good actions and the bad actions. The good speech, the bad speech, the good thoughts and the bad thoughts. And that's what a person should be doing. A person should be identifying where is the positive and the good place, space that he wants to put himself in. And that's why he says, if that's the case, if the whole purpose of a carbon is to purify and to work on our thoughts, then for sure a negative thought while we are bringing a carbon will disqualify it, because the thought process is such an integral part of the process of the carbon. And that's why the mitzvah of Pigel definitely applies with a carbon, because the thought process is such an important part. And therefore, if you're not going to have the right thoughts, well then obviously you're ruining, you're disqualifying the whole carbon. Okay. Let's now understand this concept of thoughts in a very beautiful way. So we'll touch, I hope we'll have time to see. Oh, there was... Yeah, there's a few more minutes. Okay. I want to show you something really beautiful. I'm only going to be able to, I'm going to have to minimize because I can't see here. One second. Beautiful, beautiful. So this is at the end of your booklet, but it doesn't matter. You can just listen. Some of this is in Yiddish, some is in Hebrew. This is a writing from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe. And he says, it's like different talks, but he also wrote. And he wrote very, and almost poetically and beautifully. So here he is talking about the power of thought. Now we just, pigel in the mitzvah is the negative thoughts, right? Because you're thinking to do something wrong, and that disqualifies. But as we know, in Torah, we say that the positive is always stronger than the negative. So if a negative thought can disqualify, then a positive thought is definitely powerful. So that's what we say, machshava ma'eles. Thoughts have power. Thoughts are effective. Thoughts actually accomplish something. And he says, hine levad zayis vas machshava is der erste levush, una levush hama'uchad. We know that in the neshama a person has, and just the way we work, we have three what we call garments, which means three ways we operate: thought, speech, and action. And the first one, the one that's closest to us as individuals, are our thoughts. That's something that we keep private, nobody else knows, but yet that's the closest to us. That's the initial, that's the first thing. And we say, is machshava ma'eles, unes is naigeya lemaisa. So therefore, thoughts definitely have an impact. And obviously, they affect and they hopefully bring, and they are important to the action that follows. The trachten mikayach yenin, the machshava toiva. So when we think good about another, and as we say, with good thoughts, vi'iyunis, and we think deeply, Das alein is an inyan shel maise. This itself is already an action. Nor das is der asiya fin oilam hamachshava. But it's like the action in the world of thought, which means if we think good about somebody else and we actually stop for a moment, we don't just let it pass, but we stop and we actually contemplate it, something really positive about somebody or something positive that you want to do for somebody, that is what we call the action in the world of thought. Nardas is der asiya, as we say, es darf noch dem up. Afterwards, obviously, it has to have a hishtalshlus, it has to evolve, in other words, it has to have an effect to go to dibur, to speech, and then it has to go to action. Obviously, if we think we're going to do a favor for somebody and we don't do it, it doesn't help them that much. But the bottom line is that the first thing is the thought, but we'll see in a minute. Even thinking something good, when we don't have the power to actually do, affects. And I'll show you something beautiful. So he says that at that time, the Friedrich Rebbe was in, I think he was already at, in America, and he was thinking about certain of his chassidim that were still in Russia. And he actually mentioned them by name, but he was thinking about them. And he says, machshava ein la ma'atzurim. Thoughts has no limitations and no blockages. The ein ba'ada mechitza samavdilas, nothing can block. I can always reach where it needs to reach. So one person asked the Friedrich Rebbe, that's all very nice and good that you're thinking about those chassidim who are having a very hard time in Russia. But what does it help them? As he says, unvas hatiyaner from them, what does the other person have from it if you think about them in a positive way? And the Friedrich Rebbe answered, no, gar afula. They have a tremendous amount. In other words, it benefits them tremendously. And a very interesting thing is that that person that asked, the Friedrich Rebbe asked him, he said, where were you last Sukkot? Which means that last Sukkot, this person was still in Russia. And what the Friedrich Rebbe is hinting is, I thought about you, and now look where you are. Now you are here in a free country. You have been saved. Why? Because I thought about you. And I'd want to show you something really, really magnificent. I know it's so beautiful, the language, so I don't know, I hope we'll be able to do it. The Friedrich Rebbe explains something very beautiful. He retells a story. We'll do some of it inside and some orally. And he talks, okay, so he says, obviously, that positive thoughts are much more powerful because anything in the positive definitely is greater than in the negative. That's how Hashem created it. And he tells a story of Reb Pinchas of Karitz. Reb Pinchas of Karitz was one of the most famous chassidim of the Baal Shem Tov and of the Mizritcher Magid. And Pinchas of Karitz actually writes, and he says like this, it was on a Yontif of Erev Sukkot, and he writes to his Rebbe the Maggid of Mizrich. And he says like this, Roiv Toida, he's thanking him, Ba'ad HaHaskara, for remembering him, Shezachar, V'nasa Oisik Vait Ktushas Al Machshevaisav. So Pinchas of Koritz is in a different town, and he's thanking the Mizricher Maggid, but he writes it in a letter, and he that the Mizricher Maggid thought about him, and he's thanking him for thinking about him, B'yayim HaKippurim on Yom Kippur. He says, as soon as you, my Rebbe, thought about me, I felt it where I am. So the Maggid was in a different town, Pinchas of Koritz is in a different town, and the Maggid thought about him, and it actually rippled all the way to where Pinchas of Koritz is, and it affected him positively, he felt it. So now, the Friedrich Rebbe says, we want to understand how this works. So he says like this. In Gila, now he discusses how love works. In other words, the connection that we have between people. In Gilui Ha'ava is Dom Madregas Chalukais. When it comes to love, there are many different levels. Vaslafi Oifendi Madregas Ar Ha'ava. And according to the level, so to speak, that's how much, if you want to say, is the light of the love. In other words, that's how deep the love is. So he gives examples. And he says, Atazai Zainin Ditnuais, and so too are the, so to speak, the movements, or if you want to say, the gestures of how we show the love. And there are different gestures and there are different things that we do which show love. And let's see how he says. Hadarga harishayna bikli ha'ava hu hashotas yad bivchinas b'nesinas v'kabalas shalom. This is a very interesting thing. So the Friedrich Rebbe will go in detail. I know we're definitely not going to be able to finish today, so I'll just read you this part, and I don't want to rush this because it's so beautiful, but this is so incredible. He says that the first thing that we know when we meet somebody, just a normal gesture of acknowledging them, is you shake their hand. And shaking somebody's hand, that is acknowledging that they're there. And he says, "Vagam ki einay ella inyan chitzayni." It's only an external thing. K'may shenog b'chala oilam, that it's something which is, you know, conducted. You know, that's how the world conducts itself. D'gishe peikshim zezeh, when people meet each other, noisnim yodam zeh lazeh, you give each other a hand. V'ein bazeh shum regesh shel ahava. And nowadays, the Friedrich Rebbe will say, it doesn't really show love. It's like, I know you. It's acknowledging. Hello, how are you? It's like, I see you're here. Nor be'emes, ati chitzenius hat gemacht die weltike kaltkeit. He says the truth is, what made it that the shaking of the hand and the saying shalom aleichem is only an external thing to acknowledge somebody? It's the worldly coldness. What does that mean? Because he says, amol is a proster shalom aleichem euch given an andere. In the olden times, you know, we always reminisce, he says, in days of old, a simple, just seemingly external shalom aleichem was different than nowadays. It was an emissary, it was truth. And he says, beautiful language, a reiner, it was clean. And what that means is, a mol is given anders, once it was different. And he talks about different kinds of coins that were truth. But in other words, that when a person extended a hand, it was with an honest wanting to see the other person. I'll show you in beautiful language. He says, Alein given emes. Is there proster shalom aleichem? When aleichem shalom euch given emes. Because you were honest and you were truth and people were authentic people. So when you stretched out your hand and you said shalom aleichem, it was a gesture of truth. See is alein given varim. It was warm. And as he says, is there mitvache dicker shalom aleichem on aleichem shalom euch given avarimer? Since you felt warm inside when you said shalom aleichem, it was also a warm greeting. As it, and you meant it. It was truthful. He says, on as zwei iden haben sich getroffen. So when two Jews met each other, hat sich gesagt shalom aleichem and aleichem shalom, and they would say shalom aleichem and aleichem shalom mit achayis pnimi, with an inner excitement, so to speak, with an inner love. And that's how it was. Nowadays, unfortunately, he says, the Veltik Hanachas, it's like the etiquette. So you have to meet them, you have to say Shalom Aleichem. So what does that do? Haben arayin getrugin a gewisse seder in darkei achayim. So that brought a certain, you know, way that we have to act, you know, that's the right thing to do. Aber euch a gewisse kaltkeit. But it also brought a coldness. Because you have to say Shalom Aleichem, so you say Shalom Aleichem. But do you truly mean it? Do you feel the warmth? And does the person feel that warmth? As a gewisse heder ha'emes, a little bit of a untruth to it, right? It's not a real feeling of, I'm happy to see you, right? A duty, exactly. That's the right word, a duty. And sometimes it's dishonest. And that's why, unfortunately, in dem itztikin gevenlich and shalom aleichem, like nowadays we just do it, as you say, out of duty and just what we're used to, ken men oft mol, oder mererimol, so sometimes and sometimes more than sometimes, feelin, as we can say, unfortunately, and he says it in such a strong language, instead of it being a greeting, it's almost like gei gesund. You say shalom aleichem, but you mean goodbye. Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to stop here. And I want to see, one more line. He says, Aber der Teure dicker Shalom Aleichem. But like the way Teure says that we should say Shalom Aleichem, der Amalek Shalom Aleichem, is a keli zu ar ha'ava. That was a vessel of love. That was a gesture of love. It wasn't a gesture. It was a true greeting because we wanted to see. But we're going to see more next time. That way it says, that's the first level. But next time we'll understand why I'm bringing this in. I'm going to stop this share. I'm sorry. And I'll let you, I think you can unmute yourself. Yeah, I've allowed you already if you have any questions. But next time, it's very, very beautiful and I want to continue this. But we'll see the power of thought a little bit more. In the meantime, everybody should have a happy Purim. As we say, that's Purim is definitely about the thoughts, the feelings, happiness, the joy that we're supposed to be. So this week, we're really supposed to try hard to feel joy. If we don't. But we should truly be able to naturally feel joy. It should be a good week for everybody and a really beautiful Yontif. Any questions? Any?
It's not Tzvudina. Yeah. So people say hello to one another. They don't mean anything.
It's almost like goodbye. The hello is the goodbye. That's what he says. Shalom aleichem is zay gesund. It's so sad, but unfortunately, it's almost like a bother sometimes. Yeah.
Ask how are you? They don't really know what to know how are you.
Ive.
How are you? It's not. It's just the how are you become to me like hi.
I know. Unfortunately, it is that way. Well, look, we can try not to. We can try. Sometimes the truth is that we're pressed for time. That's the sad thing of life. But you're right, Leigh, it shouldn't be. Shouldn't be.
Oh, no.
Shouldn't be. 100%. 100%. Okay. But anyways, we'll try to work on it. The thoughts matter. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.